is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded April 18th, 2011. Episode 39, Mumble Mumbo Jumbo.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble from Chris Gamble's Analog Life.
Whoa, Chris, you just cut out there. It was we're using a new program this morning called Mumble.
Oh, no.
I think you were mumbling.
I might have been. I've been accused of that before.
Right.
By which I mean to say...
Because we're trying out this new program, Chris is going berserk again, if you're wondering. It took us, 40 minutes to dick around trying to get this new Mumble program up and running. So there's a dedicated server running. We're talking into that instead of Skype. And it turns out
Skype.
We failed, right?
Well, it's not that bad. It's really my audio setup.
Well, we're using it to talk to each other. At least it doesn't do the Skype thing of dropping out when we're talking over each other. But no, we can't record, so we're recording locally again. Bummer.
Mm. Oh, we'll get there.
Anyway.
We'll get there.
Yes.
Yeah. It's in my job.
No third guest today. Sorry.
No
third
just
wheel.
Us.
Yep.
Just us.
Stuck with us with no clue and, I don't know, a list that's not looking too impressive.
We'll make it impressive, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start out with some news. You guys are about the contest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we decided that last night. Me and Jerry are going to be announcing the contest winners.
Jerry and Wednesday. Thank you.
Sorry. Jerry Ellsworth and we've been scolded before because I didn't explain who that is, but Jerry Ellsworth,
really?
Hackmaster Elite, and I will be recording a live video show on Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're going to just announce the winners from the 555
contest.
That's
American Eastern Standard Time as opposed to Australian Eastern Standard Time.
You guys have your own Eastern Standard?
We have our own Eastern Standard Time. Yes, it's AEST, Australian Eastern Standard Time, yep.
Oh, yeah. For you guys, it'll probably be noonish, I think, or something.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. Well,
so 9 p.m. here is usually 11 a.m. Sydney, I think.
Oh, that's right, yep, so I'll definitely be here, or I should be.
Yeah. Yep, so can't win them all. We kind of left out the UK, but sorry about that, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you going to do? There's only so many time zones you can really hit, so, and I have to work during the day, so, yeah, got it. Got to squeeze it in somewhere.
You poor bastard working for a living, huh?
I know. Yeah.
This audio is breaking up real bad. I'm sure you guys can't hear it, but we're recording locally, but yeah. You're breaking up there, Chris.
Technology. Yeah. Sorry. It's probably my girlfriend downloading something. Yikes. Anyways, the contest is almost over. I'm kind of excited for it to be over. No offense to the people, you know.
And you, I got a bone to pick with you. You won't allow me to... Yes, you, Christopher Gamble.
Yeah.
You won't allow me to release my winners for my part of the contest, the Australian award, until you guys release yours. What a load of bullshit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because it's not your winners. It's the people you're picking for the contest.
And I should be able to announce that any time I'm damn well right.
See, that's why I didn't give you the spreadsheet 3 months ago when you wanted it.
Right.
I knew first thing you'd do would be like, oh, we got winners, all right. And then I'd be like, oh, I guess we have to wait a little longer because not all of us are picking on a whim, Dave.
Right. Well, I am picking on a whim, and that's the way I like to do it.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I was going to tell you, if you want to record a video, we could just play that during ours. If you want to like do a 1 minute clip, we'll just play the clip during ours.
Oh, right. Okay. Or I could just appear live.
I don't know how Jerry's setup is, but yeah, I don't know how that works. Jerry's got all this video equipment. You know, I feel like an idiot. I'm sitting around with this audio mixer trying to figure this stuff out, and she's mixing video, and I'm like,
I feel awesome. Yeah, because she used to work for a company that did that. So she worked on the hardware to do that sort of stuff. So. Yeah, I'm sure she's got a bunch of the company's hardware in the basement, you know.
Yeah, she said she raided the junk box.
Right.
Yeah.
Lovely.
But yeah, we'll be doing that, and then the contest is over, and I'll move on to my next thing. Who knows what that's going to be? I'm actually thinking about, I got a board from Chris Savage from Parallax, so I think I'm going to try that out.
Oh, okay.
I've never done propeller stuff before, so I was going to try out that. Oh,
it's a propeller. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Versus what else?
Well, any other bloody microcroller on the market. You know, it's nothing. It's a propeller. It's a microcontroller, you know.
Yeah.
Except it's a multi-core COG thing. We've talked about it on here before. COG.
Except that from where I grew up, it'd be CAG.
CAG?
Yeah, the nasally A's where I came from.
Right.
CAG.
Wonderful.
Amherst.
Oh, boy. Anyway,
what have you been up to?
Look out, what have I been up to?
Yeah.
I've been living the dream.
Yeah? How's
Absolutely.
That going?
Absolutely.
Update our listeners.
It's going pretty good. Update the listeners. Well, it's unbelievable. You know, you think you've got all the free time in the world now that you're not actually working, right? And I've been busier than ever. I don't know how I fitted everything in before. It's incredible. While I did have a day job, I still can't fit everything in. Can't do
That's
everything
crazy.
I want to do. I know, it's nuts.
Just did you used to just
things.
Not sleep, maybe? Maybe that was what it was?
I just used to make more of my time on the weekends and at nights in the mornings. Now I guess I'm a bit lazier in that respect, you know. Spending more time with the wife and, yeah.
Oh, that's a good thing, man.
She seems a bit happier, yeah.
That's good.
It's all good.
That's good. Tell her you should never work again.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to convince her of that. And I'm working on ways to try and make the blog full-time, you know, full-time living. There will be updates to that in the coming weeks, I hope. So we'll see.
Good.
Because
good.
At the
I'm
moment, yes, I am living the dream, but, you know, the money's got to come from somewhere, so.
That's right.
At the moment, it's not quite enough. So coming from the ads and everything else, but no, it's certainly keeping me afloat for a while, and I'm still trying to win that damn Tektronix contest.
That's going to be a hard win. I've seen some other.
Do it. All these other ones are just votes just keep racking up and
oh,
up.
Oh really? I haven't seen the votes, but I that one video the scanning electron or the electron microscope one.
You're
I saw
breaking
that one before.
Up big time, Chris.
Oh, sorry.
I've completely lost Chris. Can't hear him.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, he's back.
Now I'm back? Yep. All right. Sorry.
This thing's breaking up a lot. Worse than Skype. Jeez, we thought Skype was shit.
I guess they have, you know, people with skills actually doing that stuff.
Right. Anyway, yes, the Tektronix contest.
The electron microscope one, that one. I saw that video before you actually entered it in the video into the contest, and that's just a
that's right.
Ridiculous
I haven't actually
hobby.
Watched that yet. Yeah, I know. Oh, that's crazy.
Brilliant. And he built a lot of the hardware. I think he grabbed a lot of the hardware from like a you know, like a surplus store, but he ended up kludging a lot of it together too, and I think he built a bunch of his own too.
Awesome.
And I know he used an old Tektronix as the eventual display output.
Right.
As like the XY.
Okay, therefore he could enter the Tektronix contest as you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And that's pretty cool. But unfortunately, it's not based on the quality of the video or the quality of the idea of the Tektronix contest. It's purely based on votes. And, let's not say it can be, you know, you can sort of cheat if you want to, I guess.
Social engineering. How
you
about
can,
that?
You can socially engineer your result. Right.
Oh, please. You were trying to do that too, mister. Oh, vote for me. I'm on the amp hour.
Well, so am I, but I'm doing it legally, you know?
I have a platform to launch my vote getting from.
Well, it's rather interesting, right? Because I've got 8,000 viewers, roughly. And I got pretty much the number of votes I expected, you know? Because everyone's not going to vote. Right, so they just couldn't be bothered, right? Couldn't care less, which is fair enough. And I got like 1,000-odd votes within a day or two, which is pretty much what I expected, which is fantastic. But then these other ones are beating me, and they're getting like 1,000 within a day or two. And I'm going, well, who are these people? They must have at least the same audience I have, either that or some very dedicated friends, you know? So I don't know. I don't know how.
Or heaven forbid the projects are that enthralling, Dave.
Right, that everyone's voting for it. Right, no.
Yeah, what are
some
the top
really
ones
awesome
right now?
Ones on there that have gotten, you know, 20 votes and stuff. So because really? They obviously couldn't get anyone to vote for them, and no one's going to visit the site just to vote. You know, like I'm going to go on there and vote for the best one. No, you're going to vote for your friend, That's the only reason you're going there. So, anyway, please keep voting every day.
Oh, yeah, every day, people.
I need as many votes as I can.
I think the last thing you need is another scope, unless you're going for the iPad, in which case you're on your own, buddy.
No, I definitely want the scope. I need the money.
If I
win it, I'll do a review and a teardown, then I'll sell it. And that'll keep me afloat for another month. So,
You and your test and measurements reselling business.
Right.
Start your own eBay channel.
I have got my own eBay shop. I've got 400 feedback, you know.
Woo-hoo. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I've been doing it for a long time. I've been buying and selling test gear for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Well, that's good. Good luck to you, man. I appreciate I'm glad you're entering that contest. It's good. It's good fodder for the show.
Let's get on to something else, shall we?
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of which, shout out. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so Jeremy, we talked about him a couple times in here. Yep. He actually was on the Discovery Channel.
Awesome.
He got on the real TV, you know, not the computer TV.
Right, the kiddie TV, huh?
Yeah.
YouTube's going to take over the world one day. You wait and see.
Oh, yeah, well... Yeah, the people that were he said that they grabbed his video. That was just like one of the editors calling him, and they have like just this video review show, and just kind of going through like tech stuff from the week.
Oh,
and
right.
So they saw his, and it was good
is
review.
Is this some sort of new video he's got, or is it one of his old ones they just happened to stumble across?
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. He calls it the sudo glove because I never thought about it that way. You know, I call it sudo. I don't know. I don't know if I should call it that.
I have no idea what sudo is.
It's a command in Linux.
Sudo. Okay.
Super user do. That's the idea.
Right.
And I never realized that people say do and sudo. At first, I thought he was saying it wrong, because I've always just said it sudo. Anyways,
that's how I would pronounce it. Yeah, but if you know what the command, if you know what the acronym actually means, then it takes on different slant.
Know. Anyways, I was real confused at first, but it's this glove that basically is a controller for a RC car, a radio controlled car.
Cool.
And it's a glove, so pretty cool.
Okay.
And
it's just
definitely
got,
worth.
It's just got accelerometer sensors to, and you do hand motions or something, I assume, and it controls the car. Or
yeah,
I haven't seen the video because I tried to download it, and the bloody thing just wouldn't work. It just sat there spinning its wheels around, and it did nothing for 10 minutes. So screw that.
That's no good.
Discovery Channel server.
Yeah, right. It's got a flex sensor on it too, so he can flex his finger, and that actually is a control as well. So it does either like a resistive measurement or some other kind of measurement on the sensor. And then there's rotation, so I think there might be a gyroscope and then there's an accelerometer, I believe, as well. So
He's other probably than, just using one of those stick-on stress sensors. Have you ever used those?
I've never used those, have you?
Oh, they're very cool. Yeah, I've used them before. And they're basically, as you said, they're a resistive thing which changes when you stretch them, basically, when you contort them. And the idea is you stick them down with glue. You get some special glue. You stick them down on the thing that you want to measure, like a bar or something, you know, if you've got some bar of metal, you know. So that's how all these strain gauges, they're basically a strain gauge. And, And you actually stick them to the surface. There's a bit of art in that to get it just right. And then when the bar flexes, the metal or anything, plastic or anything you're trying to measure flexes, then the thing changes resistance. And, you hook that up to a bridge circuit and you amplify that and bingo, you can get a strain output based on thing. And they're just really cool. You actually stick them on things. But they're not designed for, bending 90 degrees and stuff like that. They're sort of designed for really micro sort of
I think this
strains.
Might be a different type of thing.
Possibly.
It's not, it doesn't
it just
look like
reminded
a
me of that. That's
linear
all.
Strain.
Yeah, they're
that's
very
cool,
strain gauges.
What was the application you were using it for, the strain?
Oh, because I'm involved in all sorts of seismic stuff where we stretch things and we contort things and we have to check that and monitor that and stuff like that because we're building huge mechanical things that are designed to tow behind boats. So, strains and stresses are all very, very important.
Yes.
And then we've got strain isolation modules, which will actually isolate any strain going through, you know, so you can have a module that's sort of stress-free and you need to measure all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I used to build my own strain gauge amps and stuff like that.
That's cool.
Roll my own, so.
I'm always amazed that, like, you know, with the strain measurements and these really strong materials that are actually straining, right? It's just amazing that, even if you look at the equation, it's just the, you know, it's moving, what, like a sub-millimeter kind of thing?
Yeah, something like that, a few microns, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't want it to move at all. That's a rigid substance. That's not supposed to do that.
Well, if you're into climbing, like, well, you know, abseiling and canyoning like I am, then you have these carabiners and you look at them and they're designed to, like, break at, you know, 2.5 tons or something like that, you know. Ton? that's a US thing, right?
Does it have an E on the end, Dave?
Oh, right, it's the E on the end, right. Okay. Anyway, right, 2.5 tons, like, you know, 2,500 kilos, right? Huge. Yeah. And it's just this little bit of lightweight aluminium. And you go, how? You know?
Yeah,
it's just,
that's crazy.
Oh. And they do actually stretch. If you've actually seen the stress tests on these things, like, they actually do a breakage test on them. And you can actually see them sort of... You can physically see them with your eyes actually stretching a little bit. And it's like, God. You know?
Like the plasticity of it and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that. Man.
It's scary. It really is. And some of them are individually tested before they ship them out. So you'll actually see these little marks on them where they've actually put them in the jig and they've stretched them up to, you know, half the capacity, half the braking capacity or something, just to individually test each one. And it's like, I hope you didn't do any damage to it. Well,
yeah, I was going
to
say, so your hobby is going and taking this already lightly used equipment then hanging off the side of a cliff with these things, Dave?
Yep, pretty much.
That's healthy.
I have faith in the engineering.
Yeah. Mm. You know, playing drums hasn't killed me yet, so... I think statistically I'm a little safer than you.
You're breaking up again.
Uh-oh. Man, sorry.
No, he's gone. He's back. Is he?
Oh, am I back?
You're back. All right. From the future. All right.
Man. Well.
Anyway, I've got a rant.
Okay, go ahead.
I uploaded my latest video last night. The Agilent scopes, okay? Agilent going to get a kick up the ass for this.
What's your latest video?
Oh, it's, you got to go watch it. It is...
Well, it's not on your site yet.
Oh, no, it's not, but it's up on YouTube because I haven't updated. I always upload to YouTube first. So, if you want to see my videos first, you got to subscribe to my YouTube channel. Come on, get with the program.
You know, I'm not subscribed to yours, and I don't know if I want to now after that harsh language, Dave.
Right. Anyway, standby power consumption of the new Agilent scopes. I thought it was zero because I thought...
Zero.
I thought it had a real mechanical main switch, right? It's got the real clunker mechanical switch. Yeah, it's got the mechanical bar which goes back to the mains board at the back, right? It's it was a fairly wimpy looking switch. When I did the original review and teardown, I thought, oh, that switch looks a bit wimpy, but I didn't really look into it. It was on the main section of the board, you know, the isolated main section of the power supply board, and they went to all the trouble to engineer the rod going back from the front panel that pushes on the switch and all that sort of stuff. So I just assumed, silly me, duh, that it actually switched the mains, you know, on and off. Huh. And I didn't bother to test the, you know, the standby power consumption because I just assumed it was zero. Silly me. But somebody on the forum mentioned that he realized that it was getting a bit warm when it was switched off, and he measured it, and sure enough, there is a standby power consumption. And the switch is not a mains one, it's a logic one, which goes and switches the commercial switch mode power supply output off and on. That's basically what it does. Nothing wrong there, except for the fact that the damn thing takes 6.5 watts standby power. You can fly to the bloody moon on 6.5 watts. Speaking of which, that's the name of my latest video, Agilent Fly to the Moon.
I still can't find it. I'm looking for it here on your site, or on the YouTube's channel. I can't find it, but I'm a YouTube dum-dum, so... Yeah.
Right, okay. It's number 164, I think, so...
Yeah,
search for that.
Okay, so let's define again. So you're saying standby power. You're saying switches off.
I can't hear a thing you're saying.
Okay. How about now?
Yep, now I can.
All right.
This is not working well for the radio show. Maybe we should switch back to Skype.
All right, let's do that real quick.
All right, here we go. We're switching back to Skype. Let's start it up. And
we're going to do a live switch here, people. This is hot switching. Yeah. We'll see if this works.
Oh, I got that silly Skype startup sound in my headphones.
Nice.
Yeah, this makes a great radio, doesn't it?
Anyways, the thing I'm wondering about is defining this, the, you said standby power, right?
Standby power, yep, when you switch the thing off.
Okay, so switch the thing off. So you're not talking about like quiescent power, like when it's on, but it's not really
crunching numbers. You know, the front panel on-off switch, and it's a big clunking switch. You push it, and it goes clunk, and it switches off.
Clunk.
Clunk. Okay. Yeah.
So did you trace where it's going? I mean, like, it's got to go somewhere,
yes,
right?
I traced it. It goes to a control pin on the commercial switch mode power supply.
All of 6.5 watts goes to the control pin?
No, no.
Or are you talking about the switch?
It's a logic switch, so it just it just actually ties a pin to ground. That's all it does. So
So they use this really expensive mechanical switch.
They use
just
this big, expensive mechanical switch to switch an input on the power supply to ground, and that switches off the output of the power supply, which is functionality built into this commercial Lineage brand power supply they're using, which is a really high-quality power supply apart from that. In terms of build quality and stuff like that and brand. But, 6.5 bloody watts. Can't believe it.
That's a lot of watts.
That's a lot of watts. Oh, God. Mm. As I said in the video, it's like it reminds me of the 1970s, you know? The 80s standby power consumption where nobody gave a shit.
Yeah.
But these days, you know, it's all the rage. Standby power consumption in a product is pretty much everything.
Yeah, but I mean, test and measurement equipment doesn't really care about that.
I know, but still, it's poor engineering.
If it was battery powered.
It's
a trade-off, you know? Like, that's a trade-off thing. I don't think that's that big a deal. It's annoying.
I know.
It's a waste of energy, right?
I know. But it's 6.5 bloody watts. It's a lot. There's just no excuse for that. And the thing is, they went to all the trouble and expense to engineer it all properly with the control rod, the old-fashioned control rod back. It's on, and the switches on the mains isolated part of the board and everything, but it's not a main switch. So it's like, unbelievable. So I don't know if that was like a late change in the design, because it looks like they engineered it for a main switch, and then they maybe changed their mind and went, oh, no, let's make it a logic switch instead. So, I don't know. I'm waiting to hear back from... I have to hear back from Agilent. My contact's on a break at the moment. Mm. And you haven't shown up on Skype. Where are you?
I'm here.
Not on my list, you're not?
I must have unfriended you after all those mean things you said to me.
You bastard.
I don't know. We could use Google Chat.
Oh, we could. No, because then it adjusts my volume. I don't like that.
Oh, it does do that.
No, I refuse to do it. No, Google Talk.
I don't even know.
It's great quality, but nah. I don't like it touching my microphone level.
Yeah. Don't touch it.
That's got to be a t-shirt. Don't touch my mic. Here we go.
Let's see if this works now.
He's on. All right. Here we go. Answer. All right, we're up.
Oh, wow. That's kind of weird now. So people listening up. All right, I got to shut this down.
Maybe we should shut down the other one, huh?
Yeah, that's better.
All right. Mumble. Close.
Sorry, Mumble. We loved you. It was a good try. I think the problem is my server. I mean, we're still going across an ocean here, Dave. I mean,
yeah, we are. What is it, 270... You know, a ping of 270
millisecond
ping.
Yeah,
unbelievable. What's the world coming?
Pretty high. Yeah.
Anyway, it worked. It worked for a little bit. It seemed great at start, and then we went, yeah, let's use this. You know, the quality was awesome. And it's cut out. Yeah.
Must have been those Australian ISPs. Tricky guys over there. Yeah.
Dodgy Telstra. Yeah, taken them down before, the bastards.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyway, we're back online. We're up.
That was a hot switch right there.
That was a hot switch. Live on radio. Yeah. Is that a first? No,
I
probably
doubt
not.
It. I doubt it. Yeah.
Sure, ever, the pros ever, do it all the time. And they don't even say so. But we're just, you know, lack so much amateurs. Material on this show that we're just willing to throw anything in.
Yeah. Next up, Chris brushes his teeth.
Anyway, I hate high standby power consumption. It's just bad engineering, really. You know, I mean, there's a lot of effort which goes into power supplies, commercial switch mode mains power supplies these days to make them, you know, to meet all these new energy requirements. You know, I think it's 0.1 watts is the typical standby consumption of, like, you know, your little Nokia Warwort charger or something these days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, really tiny. So, you know, I don't expect that small, but geez, under a watt would have been nice. But anyway, I don't know the reason why they need to actually leave it on, because it looks like no power is actually going to the main board. It literally just switches off the output. So maybe it's something to do with, the power supplies, it'll have a longer life if you leave the input capacitors charged, which is what it's doing, and it just switches off the output. So then you don't get that big, you know, inrush surge of current when you do a big clunking main switch, and that stresses it. And if you're doing that 10 times a day because you turn your scope off and on, maybe that's going to kill the power supply in a shorter amount of time. But those things could be engineered as well.
No power, like no storage or anything like that? Nothing going to the digital boards?
I measured it, and there appears to be nothing going to the digital board at all. So, I don't know.
Maybe you caught a legit bug. Who knows?
This is purpose designed. This is they've done it. They've done it deliberately.
Yeah, the line to that reset.
They've definitely engineered this deliberately to leave the power supply powered up and just disable the output. So
yeah,
beats me why. Anyway, Agilent. I'm sure Agilent will get back to me on that. So
yeah.
Anyway.
So how about outside of scopes? What else do you want to talk about?
It leads right into nerdcore rapping.
That's a good segue. Yeah. So there was a conference in Cleveland called Nodicon. I didn't go to it.
Nodicon?
Not a con. Yeah.
Not a con.
Yeah. Not a con.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little more hacky, like traditional, like security kind of hack than I would have been interested in.
Right, so okay. Yeah.
I didn't partake, but I was watching people tweet about it, and they started talking about Dual Core, who's a rapper.
Right.
Or Nerdcore. That's the thing. I was talking to some people about this. I didn't quite understand all of the names. There's a lot of different names, but my God, this is some nerdy rapping, and they're not bad either.
They're pretty good. There's a huge thing out there. I highly recommend everyone go watch Nerdcore Rising. We'll put a link in the show. It's a movie. Yeah, it's a documentary. And it follows MC Frontalot, who's my favorite Nerdcore rapper.
This is a movement of music?
That's what the movie's about. The movie's about MC Frontalot, who actually decides to chuck in his day job and go the world's first full-time Nerdcore rapper. And he goes on tour. That's across the US, and
insane.
It's great, and he does some really great stuff. We'll also include a link to his latest video, because his latest video is cool. It is ultra cool for his latest song. I actually tweeted that last week. I think it was. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Jeez, you're out of date. You don't follow my YouTube channel. You don't follow my tweets.
I don't think anyone could ever fault me for not being cool. I mean, like, even like in the nerd scene, I'm not cool. You know, like I'm okay with that.
Right. But based on that photo you've got on the microphone on the amp hour.
I know. Well, that's because I'm 12 in that picture.
You look about 12. Yeah. That looks
you posted it.
I did. I couldn't resist.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just missed it. I guess I don't. So you listen? Like, do you listen to this stuff? Like when you're
I've got MC Frontalot's new album. Yeah.
Like in your car? Is that like where you're listening? You're listening while you solder, or is it laying out boards?
Whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. MC Frontalot's great. I love it. Well, it sort of helps that I was going to be on his new album, but unfortunately I didn't. I didn't make the cut. So
nothing like a little ego to get right, your attention, huh, Dave?
No, he asked me to be on his new album. So yeah, he wanted to use a clip from one of my YouTube things on his. And I gave him permission to use it, and yeah, it turns out it didn't make the cut. He went in a different direction with that song slightly. So well. It's, I still think he's cool.
I feel like it's like a subculture, you know? Either that or it I'm is, just like not yeah, immersed it, enough yeah. yet.
And they've got these, you know, and you'll see in the movie that they've got these hardcore fans who follow them around, and you know, they'll like have groupies? You know, 10 hardcore fans that turn up to the front row, and you know,
wow.
It's great. Absolutely wow. brilliant. Yeah. And the Man. Of course the fans are nerdier than the guys who actually do it, so
yeah. Well, that's okay. Yep. That's all right.
And MC Frontlot wears a headlamp on stage. He's got, you know, that's his trademark look, as these are. You can actually buy his nerdcore glasses. So he wears the glasses and he wears wears a headlamp on sideways, and that's his signature wow. look. And it's just, it's terrific. I love it. Anyway, yeah, there's a whole slew of them. So it's a whole rising industry. That's why they called it Nerdcore Rising. The movie, yeah. So check it out.
See, now that's an interesting question. I don't know if obviously I haven't watched the movie yet, but if any of the, is it just because it's fun, or is there actually like a, hey, we want to get like younger people interested? You know how like they always have like, for some reason they always try and associate like hip hop with like the right. younger crowd. It wasn't anything like that, right?
No, it's just that they're rapping about stuff that nerds and geeks care about. You know, they're rapping about technical stuff, and the lyrics are brilliant, and they're all about technical. Well, they're usually about technical. You know, if you listen to some of MC Frontalot's lyrics, they're really bizarre, some of them. But yeah, they usually got a technical nerdy theme behind them, and they're just brilliant. Yeah. Another one I used to listen to was MC Plus Plus. So. Which I think is a brilliant name, MC++. I think he's faded off the scene, though. So he was one of the first, he was one of the early ones, but I don't know what happened. I haven't listened to him in a while. So I think he just died off and went and got a real job or something. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, there's people out there making a full-time living from this, and they go around to all the nerd conferences, and they get gigs at the... Yeah, so apparently you can earn a living from it if you're a good nerdcore rapper.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I'm surprised they really don't have them at, you know, some of the bigger trade shows, ESC and shows like that, so...
Yeah.
But they tend to get them at, like, more of the geek conferences.
Yeah,
you know,
like the Nautic, or the DevCons and all those
the DevCons
kind of
and the... Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all those comic ones, you know, all the comic con and all that sort of, you know, there's a whole bunch of shows like that. And yeah, they're extremely popular, and they all, you know, they have these huge concerts after the show at night, apparently, and everyone's down there in the mosh pit, all these nerds down there in the mosh pit. That must be a sight, really.
Yes.
Get your eye taken out with a pocket protector. Sorry, I'm being too stereotypical. That's great. And anyway,
I have nowhere to go after that, Dave. I don't even know where to go next.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to segue into something else from nerdcore rapping. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, how about this? It's pretty creative, and I want to talk about creativity. Have you been? Did you read that link I sent over?
Which link is this? You send a whole bunch of links. You're a link machine.
I sent a lot of links. Yeah. So I've been reading a lot of,
warning,
again? Really?
Chris has been reading again. He's got ideas. That means he's got ideas.
Feed dropped out. Yeah, right? Yeah. And they're totally original too.
Right. Okay. Tell us all about it.
I'm very easily convinced. Let's be honest.
What's your latest thing you're all excited about?
A lot of Daniel Pink lately. Do you ever read any of his stuff?
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
Wouldn't know him from Bar of Soap.
So there's a video we'll link, and this is actually how it all got started. So he did a talk at the Royal Society of Academy or something like that, and basically then this guy takes the talks. I know, right? It sounds like really happening. I hear they have nerdcore rap after
the show, and everyone gets down, right?
Yeah. No, but they, after the fact, then they take the talk and then they cut it up, and then they have, there's this guy who animates it on a whiteboard. He like draws it all out, and then they cool. sync up the talk to it. It's a really cool thing to watch. But anyways, this is how I kind of got into it, and so the thing that it's about is it's mostly about Dan Pink's book called Drive, and basically it's his entire argument is that, and I'll get to the point that actually is relating to engineering here soon and electronics.
Sure.
Basically, he refutes the entire idea that of like pay for performance. So if a company comes to you, or say you're working for a company and you get a salary, and then they say, if you make a great new product, we'll give you $1,000. And he says that there is no way that's ever going to work.
And why? And
because that's just not how humans work, basically. That's the simplest explanation, is that that's not how the human brain processes rewards, right? So like that's the carrot and stick model, where if you make a great new product, you then get $1,000. Well, that will work at first. People go off and do this.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
Go work real hard.
Yeah.
But there's like tons and tons of studies where basically people do worse. They actually they stress themselves out and they focus so narrowly on I need to get a great product. I need to get a great product that they end up making a crappy product.
I know. It doesn't work. Yeah, I totally agree. It can backfire.
Have you had like bonus programs like that before?
Oh, yeah. At my previous company, who is now not nameless.
No, that's right. Yeah.
They offered bonuses if we got, you know, if we got something. Oh, no. It's a profit. It was a profit share bonus. So if the company made a profit at the end of the year, you get a bonus. And it's like, well, whoop-de-freaking-do, you know?
Yeah.
And the argument with that is, well, I'm just one of the, you know, parts of the cog. How can I, you know, directly influence? It's not like I'm a salesman and I can go out there and, you know, actually make sales to help make that profit, you know? Yeah, and then the standard company argument is, well, everyone's part of a team, yada, yada, let's all
blah,
work together,
blah, blah,
yada,
blah,
yada.
Blah.
And then they just, you just start yawning and go back into your deal the cubicle, you know? And that's, it's, I don't know. It works in some industries, but
I don't think it
engineering
does.
Some sales and, you know, stuff like that, where their whole
earning capacity
is based on bonuses.
That's when it gets really crazy, the stuff he talks about, and stuff that I always get pissed about, right? So executive bonuses, right? Like big pay performance based bonuses, where these guys, you know, CEOs give themselves like $1 million, $2 million bonuses, right?
Regardless of the outcome.
So it's pay for performance, and it does a couple things. First off, it causes you to set goals, and then you'll do anything to make those goals. So, you know, like
either be
unethical or fudge
numbers.
But
that's why it works for sales, because sales are, you know, they will do anything to get the sale. And once you've got the sale, that's it. But then you can argue that there's, you know, client relationships you can lose and because you've screwed them over and all that. Well, you know, it gets very complicated.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't know. I think that it's obviously I'm not trying to boil the whole book down to one thing, but
of course
basically
you are.
I am. Another thing about it though is like they try and they're talking about when you get paid for something, right, you don't want to do it as much, and they show that with like kids, like when they encourage kids to like draw something, when they say the kids know they're going to draw it, they don't want to draw anymore. And it's the same thing for people, right? When you get paid for something, it's a job. And so I think that's an interesting bit for the hobbyist movement, because you look at all the awesome work that people have done, right? So 555 contest, that tech contest, of some of the entries for that, like and just like the projects we see every day coming out through the media, right? Like they're not getting paid for that. There's nothing. I mean, you could say they're getting paid in publicity, but
there's prizes at stake. You think most of those people would have done those projects if there wasn't a prize or a contest or fame at stake?
Yeah,
you know, there's a prize.
I think so.
It doesn't have to be money. It can be fame or anything else.
I think they would have done it anyways. They're just, I think a lot of the people are just looking for bounded conditions for making awesome stuff, right?
Yeah, but so, they probably wouldn't have put as much effort into it, especially in terms of video and documentation and other stuff. So, you know.
Maybe so. But I think in general, like, okay, so outside contests then even.
Right.
You know, just like everyday hobbyist movement, right? I mean, like, there's people doing awesome things.
Yeah, just because they want
it, just for the sake
of
doing it, right? And if you started saying, well, if I'm going to pay you for that stuff, you know, every you know, every awesome project you submit to Hackaday or Make or whatever else, you get $1,000. Well, you're going to start seeing it drop off, yeah. I think.
Well, that's why I'm not going to take money to produce certain videos for my blog, you know, because then I'm going, and then I'll be under a different sort of pressure. Oh, I've got to produce this nice video because they're paying me and it's got to, you know, and then I'll think too hard about it and I won't do it the way I originally would have wanted or something, you know. So, I have been offered that before, you know, money to do a certain video on a certain topic for a, you know, a sponsored by a company. So that episode is sponsored by, you know, X brand company. But it's the topic that they wanted me to do, which I might not have necessarily done.
You would have hated
on my own. Well, I wouldn't have hated it because it was still an interesting tech topic, but it's not something that, you know, I just wanted to do on a whim, which is how the blog currently works. So, yeah, it'd be different. And I know my mentality doing it would be different as well.
Yeah.
So,
anyways. I've been, you know, reading this book and reading a couple others of his. And, you know, it's really interesting because it seems like a lot of people do it wrong. I'm sure people listening have experienced their work or otherwise, you know, like. But this book's been kind of opening my eyes to the whole, because it really feeds for creativity too. Like, how do you really get someone to be creative, especially at work, right?
You let them do what they want to do.
Exactly.
That's
it. That's
exactly
right. Yeah, and you have to be willing to, like, you know, waste some money on that. You know, you have to trust your people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's like you used to tell me how you had, at one of your past companies, you had, like, just a blanket account, right, where you could just kind of charge stuff as long as it was below a certain amount, right?
Yep.
That was brilliant. I think that's a brilliant way to do it, to handle electronic designers.
Yeah, because I had my own company credit card, and I could, you know, pretty much buy, and I was free to investigate any technology I wanted to. So, that's
the way to do it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I'm sure that helped a lot, too. So, the things that Daniel Pink talks about are autonomy, which is what you were just talking about, mastery, so you want to get really good at what you're doing, you know, so allow your people to do that. And then purpose is, well, hopefully it serves some kind of purpose, like help people out, whatever product you're making is helping people out. So what I'm trying to say, Dave,
right,
is
what
I'm
going to
become a management consultant. That's what I'm really trying to say, because I read this one book.
Right.
Because that's what it feels like sometimes.
Right. I hate analyzing shit like that. It's just, you know, let engineers do what they want to do. End of story.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that.
Don't try and control them. You know, let them run wild. That's how you produce a good product.
Yeah.
Because you can't design something by committee. It doesn't work.
No. Yeah, like smaller teams and allow people to kind of pick who they're working with and what they're working on. And
yep.
Give the engineers a playground, right?
Absolutely. And don't stifle them when they get passionate about it. You know, when they speak up and tell you, you know, tell a manager that his idea is shit. So, it's just the way to kill anyone's, you know.
You mean the manager saying that the ideas of the engineers?
Well, no, the, you know, the manager stopping you from from speaking up and, you know, speaking your mind. That kills creativity dead right there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Anyways. Let's stop talking about that management shit. I don't like it.
Yeah. No, that's fine. It's a great book, though. I highly suggest it. Recommend it. At least the video. The video, too, is really fun to watch. So they have a bunch of cool videos. So we'll post that.
Sounds too stressing on the mind. I highly recommend just watching Nerdcore Rising and relax chill out and design something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're so chill, Dave.
Yeah, right. And people think I'm totally wound up.
No.
It's all part of the show. No, they confuse wound up. People always ask me. I got another comment last night. How much coffee do I drink? You know, am I on any drugs? I don't drink coffee. I'm caffeine free. I'm drug free. I work on passion and enthusiasm. People don't seem to understand that.
Dave is actually a wind up car. He has a little. Every morning he turns the crank and the rest of the day he's just unwinding.
I'm passionate about electronics and product design. I like to think that's why people watch the blog, why it's been popular and successful. You know? No, I'm not on drugs. No, I'm not, you know, it's just natural enthusiasm. God, yeah. How about you get some? You know? Instead of criticizing me for being, you know, too hyperactive and too
for being
whatever.
Dave.
Exactly. Yeah. God.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with being passionate about something. Jeez. Anyway. Enough about that. How about we get on to some technical shit?
Okay.
It's been on the list for a while.
You pick. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I had a bit of a fight with some bi-directional voltage bus translators a couple of weeks back.
Okay.
And so,
are these the active kind or the passive kind?
These are the active kind.
Okay.
I guess you could call them. They're a TI part. They're very well used. The TI TXB 0104 and 0108E parts. Okay. We'll put up a link to them. And I'll put up an interesting link to a discussion paper explaining all of the problems with these active bidirectional voltage bus translators, which we found. It's rather interesting, right? We built up this prototype circuit because we wanted to use these, you know, we wanted to talk bidirectionally, which is the key here, both directions, yeah, to different voltage levels. So, you know, from 3.3 down to 1.2. And it's easy, okay, if you do it in one direction. You never have any problems, right?
Yeah. I've done that one before.
Yeah, exactly. And it's easy. It's easy to do bi-directional if you have a direction control pin. So then, you know, but then your software has to do more. It's got to know that you're now talking in X direction instead of Y direction. And and then you switch a bit, which then enables the output buffer and it drives in one direction only. So these are actually automatic. But what we were trying to do is do bi-directional without any direction pin, right? So like an I2C bus or something like that, except it wasn't. It was like a sort of a SPI type bus. Okay. It was actually a hard bus. It wasn't like a pull-up bus like an I2C.
Oh, okay.
So
what kind of speeds are we talking about here?
And that's the other thing. We wanted fairly high speeds. We wanted 20, 30 megabits per second. Right? Ooh, which is pretty high speed when you're talking bi-directional stuff like this. As we found out, we're getting all sorts of weird effects with capacitive loading on the lines and how long the lines were and our flying leads and all sorts of stuff. And it comes down to that the fact is these special bi-directional voltage translators from TI and others, I think Analog Devices make some too, and they all work exactly the same. In fact, if you read the data sheet for it and see the internal circuit for it, it's very interesting. They've got like one shot, so they detect when the input on one side transitions, and then that triggers a one shot, which instantly transitions the other side, and then they've got to do that bidirectionally. Anyway, it's very cool. Yeah. And it turns out they are weak drivers. They're very weak. They deliberately design them not to drive any hard loads, because if they do, then they can conflict and they can blow themselves up and all that sort of stuff.
Do you mean feeding back into themselves, or if you had two?
Well, if you have two hard drivers on the bus trying to drive the bus at the same time, one's positive, one's negative, you can, you know, blow them up and you can cause all sorts of other problems.
A built-in fail-safe,
Fail-safe system, but the problem with that is that it has lots of implications for driving. Like, you know, you basically can't drive long lines, which is what we wanted to do. We thought, oh, these things are drivers, you know, and we didn't really look into the details of how hard they were driving the actual line. And it turns out not very hard at all. So we found like it worked if it was just like an inch away from our device, but that wasn't good enough for us. So, it was just really difficult and lots of issues involved there something you think was simple to convert voltage levels.
So how did you actually end up fixing it?
This is the interesting part. We actually went, well, screw that. We want these things to be really hard drivers, and you can't get any on the market that are hard drivers or are weak. So we did the old trick of just paralleling the chips up. We paralleled the channels up. So you literally put chips piggyback, they were like 4 or 8 channel devices. So we wired those up in parallel, and we found, you know, 4 or 5 channels wired in parallel would drive the amount of line that we wanted to drive. So, and then, but then you can do the old trick of actually soldering chips on top of each other as well.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
You've never done that.
I mean, I've soldered chips on top of one another before, but not for line drivers where you're paralleling.
Yeah, because you get more drive capability when you put two gates in parallel, you know, a 7-4 double line gate, you know, an AND gate or something.
Yeah.
You can get more drive capability when you put them in parallel. And it works the same with these bi-directional bus translators that work to treat. So that was our solution, to wire up the channels in parallel.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I thought it was really neat. And we went through all sorts of, you know, there was lots of signal integrity shit involved in this because,
yeah,
you know,
20 meg, right?
I mean, 20 meg and, I was making up little probes to actually probe the thing properly and we couldn't figure out what was going on and we're using a different brand of chip and it was all doing the same thing. So there you go, they're designed for weak driving.
Did you build your own probes, you said?
I built my own, low...
Just like a JFET input kind of thing?
Not actual active probe, no. Yeah.
Okay.
At the ground of the test points and stuff like that.
Okay.
I had to solder directly where I wanted them and stuff like that. So just to get decent signal integrity to measure it, we're scratching our heads for ages and it'd work if we, actually grasped the wires with our hand, it'd work you stand in a certain position and it works.
You always can isolate that to capacitance. You're like, capacitance somehow. It's like,
It turns out they're bloody weak drivers, piss weak drivers. Yeah. And they work, they're only designed for incredibly short distances, an inch tops. Actually, between
how often do you have level translations? But usually, it's for chip to chip kind of thing.
It's usually for chip to chip kind of thing. So that's what they're designed for. We were trying to silly us. We were trying to drive a couple of inches of wire. Shock horror. the article goes into all the the mystery surrounding these bidirectional voltage translators, and it's a really interesting topic. So if you're after some porn to read, then I highly recommend reading these data sheets and these articles. So
all right.
We'll link those on the site.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, I was quite excited by it. It was good fun.
That sounds like it feels good to talk technical stuff again. That's good.
It does, and they're great, and I love it. So it's just a different challenge because I don't think I've ever used these specific ones before. I've done it where you have the direction line, which makes it easy because then you can have a nice hard driver and your software controls which, so there's no chance, unless you goof your software up, there's no chance of two drivers driving the bus at the same time.
Yeah.
So anyway, these little chips are quite smart. I like them. They're great. The TXB 0104, chip of the day.
Oh, chip of the week.
Chip,
there we go.
Chip of the week. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was good fun. That was, gave me a couple of hours of joy, sort of debugging all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it was good to do some real engineering for a change.
Yeah.
How about use one of those oscilloscope things.
Oh, yeah? How about quasi-engineering? So I wanted to talk about this.
Quasi-engineering, that's called management, isn't it?
No. Well, maybe. Anyways, MathWorks just released a C code generator. Did
yes,
you see that?
They have. Yeah, I've seen it.
I don't know how I feel about that.
It's another awesome tool, right? It's $6,500 a seat, by the way.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not going to be a student goes out and buys this to complete his embedded systems course or anything.
No, $6,500. Jeez. You know.
Yeah. I guess my argument against it is, so my alma mater started teaching MATLAB as a programming language.
Yeah. MATLAB's all the rage. Everyone does MATLAB. Every engineer who comes out now is a MATLAB guru.
Yeah, I know, but
they love MATLAB at unis.
Isn't that bad? I mean, I understand where this comes from. There's probably a very real need for a C code generator because hiring someone to take your MATLAB code into C is probably not cheap. And it's probably cheaper to buy a $6,500.
You know, a lot of people, a lot of companies, they're working on, lots of DSP intensive stuff, and they'll do a lot of that in MATLAB, or they'll do all of it in MATLAB, and they'll simulate it and do, get their systems working perfectly, and then you want to convert those without error into C code to run on your micros. And it's a great tool for that. But yeah, I know where you're coming from. That yeah, it dumbs you down.
Like,
but
yeah, it's like, a, any it's like an emerging level language, old man, you know, feeling.
There's all the assembler diehards out there saying C killed programming, right? Because we don't know anything about the architecture anymore. Well,
yeah.
You know, once things get to a certain level, you've got no choice. What do you want to go out and do your simulations in MATLAB and then go hand code in assembler? You know, I mean,
I don't know how to feel about it. You know, like I haven't read a book about it yet, Dave. Come on.
As always, there are pros and cons both ways. You know, I can see it being a valuable tool, and then I can see it just being as I think you're getting to, it's a lazy person's tool.
Well,
pretty much.
I worry about like students getting this at university, like you said, and coming out and being like, huh, memory? What? Like, you know, like it's like the same thing that a lot of people deal with when they're going from real high level languages. But I don't know. I see it as a need because I see embedded getting bigger, right? And memories aren't getting much bigger for embedded things.
So is MATLAB. I see a lot of jobs out there for MATLAB skills.
Oh, really? So, start brushing up on Dave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, I've used MATLAB once or twice, you know, and that was 10 years ago. So, I know jack shit about it pretty much. But, yeah, it's a lot of people use it as their be-all, end-all tool now, and this is just another extension of that, I guess. So
expensive its extension, but yeah.
You know, you've got to say the same if you talk about this, and you've got to say even worse things about people who use LabVIEW and stuff like that. Those really ultra high level, you know, it doesn't get much more dumbass than MATLAB. LabVIEW. LabVIEW.
Yeah,
they're all the bloody same. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I could see it from the prototyping standpoint and everything like that, but eventually you got to cram that stuff into a micro, right?
Yeah, you do. But then you're lining up. But then Moore's law helps you out there, right?
That's true
because
too.
You get more processing grunt per dollar every year.
Yeah.
So, it's project specific. Sometimes you're gonna, you know, you just don't care. You just want your system to work, and that's it. And you can throw as much money and processing power and memory at it as you like. And that's not
that
a design
situation.
Requirement, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I've been in both. I've been in that situation where, you know, it doesn't matter if you use a $1,000 FPGA and, you know, gigabytes of memory to get your job done, right? It literally does not matter because you're going to make 10 of these things or they sell for $1 million a piece. So who cares if you use a $1,000 chip, right? Mm. Doesn't matter. But other times, it's really critical that you get that actually compress all that shit into as much cost effectiveness as possible because the hardware price point matters more than anything else.
Yeah. Part of the problem too, I think, is a lot as like more like lower end, like small micro stuff goes to China and India and stuff. Maybe that's, you know, because like where the money is, it's the high level focus stuff, right? So the real math intensive.
Yeah.
That's
where
long.
A lot of the leading edge stuff is these days. You know, it's a lot of high. Well, or, no, is in all this high level stuff. You know, huge amounts of DSP and fancy stuff like that. Well, you know, you try and code that in assembly language, and you're screwed. You've got to use your MATLAB. You know, you sit there for 6 months engineering this thing and simulating it in MATLAB to make sure it does exactly what you want, and then port that over. I mean, that's pretty standard for a lot of these high-end complex products these days.
Yeah.
I don't know
if that's going to last forever either. I wonder what the next step is after that. I mean, maybe it's like system, like even more system level.
I don't know. You know, an interesting real-world company example of this is Dolby. Dolby are here in Sydney. They have their development labs here.
Oh, yeah.
And they're always hiring, and they're almost every second job there has to be MATLAB. You know, you've got to know a lot about MATLAB and DSP because it's all this super, because all their core technology is all in this DSP stuff. That's it, you know, and they, you know, you can spend a year of your life just developing and optimizing some MATLAB routine to do something.
Yeah. Some like algorithm.
Exactly. And then, but because it's Dolby, they often do end, you know, actually commercially price sensitive end products. So then, You know, yeah. You may have another engineer that needs to spend 12 months converting that MATLAB routine into some HDL or something like that to really do it efficiently on, in an ASIC or something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, but that's a good point.
Yeah. Anyway, well, it's a good tool, but it's expensive and it's not used for it's not good for everything.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I think it'll be interesting as more of that the kind of higher level work too, because you know it's going to happen too. You know they're going to move it to China eventually. You know, because
right.
That's
like everyone,
that's where a lot
right?
of that. Right, right. But
like Altium.
Interesting. Well, interesting thing about China. I don't know if you saw this news article. Foxconn, so one of the huge manufacturers in China.
I saw this.
Yeah, they make Apple products, make HP products.
Yep.
They're moving out of China.
Yeah, because it's too expensive.
Oh, my God. Welcome to our pain. Oh, man.
I love it.
Yeah. They are moving to, at least they're in talks. They haven't moved yet.
Yeah,
but they're
exactly.
In talks to move to Brazil. Where there's
industry speak for it's going to happen, right? Or it's already happened and it's just a matter of, you know, signing on the dotted line, really. It's, yeah. Trust me, they've done a lot of investigation into it. These companies don't just suddenly announce something like that on a whim and then don't do it. It's,
yeah. Maybe we won't, you know.
Right.
Whatever.
No. They're definitely moving
crazy.
Out because engineering, you know, you might, like labor, just, you know, unskilled labor is still quite cheap in China, but good quality engineering labor is not cheap in China. Yeah. In fact, in Shanghai, where Altium have moved to, I've heard it's not too far off here. If you want really good quality, you know, smart engineers, they're going to be on similar wages to here. So really it's, I don't know.
Well, that's crazy. I mean, I know I've only read about Brazil, but I've heard their tech sector is kind of burgeoning. You know, it's kind of growing a lot. So
Well,
interesting
we'll
to
see.
Spread that kind of stuff around. You know, like
yeah,
that's,
we'll see what happens. Yeah. But those sort of companies have the dollars to just move in and instantly ramp up. You know, and ramp up talent and ramp up everything else. You know, they've got the resources and the money. So good luck to them. And that's just a natural progression. I mean, you know, if anyone thought China was going to dominate the world forever, you're an idiot. You know, things naturally move on.
Yeah.
It's just the way of the world. As the Chinese people, you know, their standards of living come up and they all want what we want. And in our first world, well, they're not saying they're a third world country, but, you know, their standards of living and expectations are you know, lower than ours at present. So...
Right. It's silly to think otherwise, right?
Yeah.
That it
and there, you know, it won't be long if they're not there already. Like in cities like Shanghai and Hong Kong and places like that, it's, you know, people want a higher standard of living. They want higher wages and they want all sorts of stuff and they want their fancy cars and they want their big plasma TVs and they want their iPhones and whatnot. And you know, all of that lifestyle stuff costs money and therefore, you know, you're... I don't know. It's a whole finance thing, but eventually it's
let's just ignore that. Well, the interesting thing about that
is
you know, like what happens after? So first, you know, blue collar jobs kind of went overseas. At least I'm talking from the U.S. perspective.
Right.
And then next is obviously going. So if the blue collar jobs then are moving from China to somewhere else, right? So then possibly the white collar jobs, you know, like the technical work, and we've already seen that with, you know, chip manufacturers are setting up shop in China because there's a lot of great talent over there, both analog and digital. And India is a rising, you know, rising star in those markets too. Not rising, they're already there, right?
Yeah.
So those things are going too. So what's left, right? So what's left after all those jobs move overseas or even just spread out? What's left then? Because this is kind of another thing.
Well, countries panic and realize that they need to bring them back. And that's happening in the U.S., you know. They start realizing, oh, it's economically viable to do it here again, is it?
Yeah,
and the cycle starts again.
Yeah. Well, there's a higher level, though. So this Dan Pink guy that I've been reading about, right? That's another thing he writes about in a different book that I read. is basically that the last level is creativity. Like, so say you've abstracted all of the process stuff out. So you're not making it anymore, and you're not even necessarily creating the system pieces like an analog chip or a digital chip or anything like that. What's left after that, right?
Well,
yeah. dreaming up the system. That's
somebody's
got to
yeah, somebody's got to come up with the ideas and dream it all up and yeah. make it happen.
And here's the crazy thing: that's the hobbyist movement. That's what's crazy to me. Like, I mean, granted, it happens in industry too, right? There's these large yep. system integrators that you know need to make product that are making
and
products.
And the Apples
that are,
of the world that yeah, lead exactly. in that sort of aspect.
Exactly. But the thing that's interesting is that the small guys can now do it because there's all those other resources available. That's what's interesting to me.
Very true.
Yeah. So, you know, you have your little video clip of one hacker, one maker. You know, you like saying that stuff.
Yep. Can change the world.
That's right. There it is. He said it.
One hobbyist can change the world. They really yeah. can. And that's leaves us yeah. for today's show because we're well over.
Are we really?
I think so.
I haven't been tracking.
No, I forgot to press the stopwatch as well, but I can see we've been recording for 1 hour and 6 minutes.
Mm.
So unless Oops. We dicked around for 6 minutes at the start, then...
Well, I can try and cut out some of the audio snafus maybe, yeah.
Eh, who cares? Leave it in.
Yeah, yeah. So, as a new reminder, if you have any suggestions, please leave them on the website. You can tweet me or Dave, and, you know, Dave's EEV blog forums are another good place to...
Yep.
Find information about the show. So
please join the forum. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel. And
I'm not going
to
do it.
Ah, come on. I need the numbers.
I already did it. I did it while we were talking. So.
Awesome. It's all about yeah. the numbers.
Oh, yeah. I'm just
I'm
going
to be doing more of that, Reb, by yeah. the way. I'm going to be encouraging people to
yeah.
subscribe and you know yeah. do all sorts well, of things and donate.
Now,
and...
now I'm just a cag in the machine.
Right. All right, thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next week, guys.